Chapter 22. Sending a voice into Villeneuve's ear. Thou dost divine the hour. Villeneuve, but those stern days, that heretofore were audible to me at each unhappy time I strove to pass. Spirit of the years, have been annulled. The will grants exit freely, yea, it says, ow. Therefore make now thy time. Spirit of the pities, may his sad sunken soul merge into not meekly and gently as a breeze at eve. Villeneuve, from skies above me, and the air around those callings which so long have circled me at last do whisper out. Now it shall be. He seals a letter, and addresses it to his wife, then takes a dagger from his accoutrements, that are hanging alongside, and, lying down upon his back on the bed, stabs himself determinedly in many places, leaving the weapon in the last wound. Ungrateful master, generous foes, farewell. Villeneuve dies, and the scene darkens. Seen via King George's watering place, South Wessex, the interior of the LD Rooms Inn. Boatmen and burghers are sitting on settles round the fire, smoking, and drinking. First burgher, so they've brought him home at last, eh? And he's to be solemnized with a roaring funeral? First boatman, yes, thank God. Is better to lie dry than wet, if canst do it without stinking on the road gravewards. And they took care that he shouldn't. Second boatman, tis to be at Paul's, so they say that no. And the crew of the Victory have to walk in front, and Captain Hardy is to carry his stars and garters on a great velvet pincushion. First burgher, where's the captain now? Second boatman, nodding in the direction of Captain Hardy's house, down at home here biting with his own folk a bit. I zid and walking with him on the esplanade yesterday. He looks 10 years older than he did when he went. He brought the gallant hero home. Second burgher, now how did they bring him home, so that he could lie in state afterwards to the naked eye? First boatman, well, as they always do, in a cask of spirits. Second burgher, really, now. First boatman, lowering his voice, but what happened was this. They were a long time coming, owing to contrary winds, and the Victory being little more than a wreck. And grog ran short, because they'd used near all they had to peckle his body in. So they broached the admiral. Second burgher, how? First boatman, well. The plain calendar of it is, that when he came to be unhooped, it was found, that the crew had drunk him dry. What was the men to do? Broke down by the battle, and hardly able to keep afloat, 'twas a most defendable thing, and it fairly saved their lives. So he was their salvation after death as he had been in the fight. If he could have known it, 'twould have pleased him down to the ground. How I would have laughed through the spigot hole colon drawn, my hearties. Better I shrivel that you famish. Ha ha. Second burgher, it may be defendable afloat, but it seems queer ashore. First boatman, well, that's as I had it from one, that knows Bob Loveday of Overcombe, one of the Victory men that's going to walk in the funeral. However, let's touch a livelier string. Peter Green, strike up that new ballet that they've lately had printed here, and were hawking about town last market day. Song, the night of Trafalgar, I, in the wild October nighttime, when the wind raved round the land, and the back sea, 12, met the front sea, and our doors were blocked with sand, and we heard the drub of Dead Man's Bay, where bones of thousands are, we knew not what the day had done for us at Trafalgar. All, had done, for us at Trafalgar. Two, pull hard, and make the nose, or down we go, one says he. We pulled, and bedtime brought the storm, but snug at home slept we. Yet all the while our gallants, after fighting through the day, were beating up and down the dark, sue west of Cadiz Bay. The dark, sue west of Cadiz Bay. Three, the victors and the vanquished, then the storm it tossed and tore, as hard they strove, those worn-out men, upon that surly shore. Dead Nelson and his half-dead crew, his foes from near and far, were rolled together on the deep, that night at Trafalgar. The deep, that night at Trafalgar. The cloud curtain draws. Chorus of the years, meanwhile the month moves on to counter deeds vast as the vainest needs, and fiercely the predestined plot proceeds. Act 6, scene at the field of Austerlitz. The French position, the night is the 1st of December following, and the eve of the battle. The view is from the elevated position of the Emperor's bivouac. The air cuts keen and the sky glistens with stars, but the lower levels are covered with a white fog stretching like a sea, from which the heights protrude as dusky rocks. To the left, are discernible high and wooded hills. In the front mid-distance the plateau of Pratzen outstands, declining suddenly on the right to a low flat country covered with marshes and pools now mostly obscured. On the plateau itself are seen innumerable and varying lights, marking the bivouac of the center divisions of the Austro-Russian army. Close to the foreground the fires of the French are burning, surrounded by soldiery. The invisible presence of the countless thousands of massed humanity that compose the two armies makes itself felt indefinably. The tent of Napoleon rises nearest at hand, with sentinel and other military figures looming around, and saddled horses held by attendants. The accents of the Emperor are audible, through the canvas from inside, dictating a proclamation.
Voice of Napoleon, soldiers, the hordes of Muscovy now face you, to mend the Austrian overthrow at home. But how so? Are not these the self-same bands you met and swept aside at Hollabrunn, and whose retreating forms, dismayed to flight, your feet pursued along the trackways here? Our own position, vast and menacing, is rich in chance for opportune attack, for, say they march to cross, and turn our right a course almost at their need their stretching flank will offer us, from points now prearranged. Voice of a marshal shows it, your majesty, the wariness that marks your usual far-eye policy, to openly announce your tactics thus some 12 hours ere their form can actualize. The voice of Napoleon, the zest such knowledge will impart to all is worth the risk of leakages.
The secretary, write on. Dictation resumed,
soldiers, your sections I myself shall lead, but easier minds who would expostulate against my undue rashness. If your zeal so hot confusion in the hostile files as your old manner is, and in our rush we mingle with our foes, I'll use fit care. Nevertheless, should issues stand at pause, but for a wink while, that time you will I your emperor the foremost in the shock, taking his risk with every ranksman here. For victory, men, must be no thing surmised, as that which may or may not beam on us, like noontide sunshine on a dubious morn. It must be sure. The honor and the fame of France's gay and gallant infantry so dear, so cherished all the empire through binds us to compass it. Maintain the ranks, let none be thinned by impulse, or excuse of bearing back the wounded. And, in fine, be everyone in this conviction firm, that 'tis our sacred bond, to overthrow these hirelings of a country not their own. Yea, England's hirelings, they. A realm stiff-steeled and deathless hatred of our land and lives. The campaign closes with this victory, and we return to find our standards joined by vast young armies forming now in France. Forthwith resistless, peace establish we, worthy of you, the nation, and of me. Napoleon.
To his marshals, so shall we prostrate these paid slaves of hers England's, I mean the root of all the war.
Voice of Murat, the further details sent of Trafalgar are not assuring. Voice of Lannes, what may the details be?
Voice of Napoleon, moodily, we learn that 26 ships of war, during the fight and after, struck their flags.
Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.